Hey guys, just a quick one before we start this episode. I wanted to talk to you about an amazing online educational platform called Brilliant. Brilliant is an online learning platform with some incredible and unique content targeted for STEM education, and that's science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. The combination of high quality courses, creative learning design, and beginner friendliness makes it very appealing for all students. The user interface is very modern, and they offer a 7-day free trial for you to test it out. Now, their catalogue currently features more than 60 courses on subjects as varied as neural networks, solar energy, and cryptocurrency. All the lessons taught come with interactive exercises, quizzes, and daily challenges, all to keep the students of Brilliant as engaged with the materials as possible. To learn more about Brilliant, simply click the link in the episode bio and revolutionize your way of learning. Hello everyone, and welcome back to the Finals Countdown series, which is brought to you by MedTalks. In this series, we are providing all of you wonderful medical students, i.e. the future of our NHS, with some short, succinct, but super useful revision talks across all specialities. Today, we're in the gastroenterology section, and I'll be covering hepatocellular carcinoma. So before we get into this episode, I'd like to just take a moment to talk about the sponsors, and they are Wesleyan. Now, Wesleyan is a company that was set up way back in 1841, and they provide tailored financial advice and products to multiple professional groups, including doctors, dentists, and teachers. I'd like to just touch on Wesleyan's latest project called The Next Step. The Next Step is born from the Wesleyan tradition of giving back. Built in collaboration with final year students, The Next Step brings together some of the brightest sparks in medicine for live events, workshops, exam resources, contents, and podcasts to make the step into F1 a little easier. They address subject matter you didn't know that you needed to know. So go on over and follow them on Instagram by searching at The Wes Next Step, or Facebook by searching The Next Step -Wesleyan, or visit their website, which is thenextstep.wesleyan.co.uk. Right then, let's get back to the episode. Right, so what things are we going to cover, and what things are you going to learn and take away from this episode? So firstly, I'll be talking all about what hepatocellular carcinoma is and how it occurs. Secondly, we'll look at the clinical features of hepatocellular carcinoma and how it is diagnosed. Then we'll go on to how we can treat it. And then finally, we'll discuss the prognosis and some complications of the cancer. Right, let's get straight into it. So what is hepatocellular carcinoma? Hepatocellular carcinoma is the most common primary liver cancer. Other liver cancers that you should know about include cholangiocarcinoma, which will be covered in a future talk, so stay tuned people, and also hepatoblastoma, which is more associated in children. Hepatocellular carcinoma accounts for 90% of liver cancers, and it mostly develops in patients with chronic liver disease. So 70 to 90% of all patients with HCC have chronic liver disease, which may be as a result of many things, and we'll talk about those shortly. In terms of the incidence, so it's actually increasing in several developed countries, and it's likely to increase for some decades due to infection with hepatitis B and hepatitis C. And we've covered all the different types of viral hepatitis in a previous talk, so if you haven't already listened to that one, then do go ahead and check that one out after this one. Now, worldwide, the prevalence of hepatocellular carcinoma follows that of Hep B and Hep C. The incidence is actually highest in Asia and sub-Saharan Africa, and it remains relatively uncommon in Europe and North America. Within the UK, the average age of development of hepatocellular carcinoma is about 66 years of age, and it's much more common in men, about 4 to 8 times more common. In children, HCC is the second most common hepatic malignancy behind hepatoblastoma, and it usually occurs in children who have pre-existing liver disease. So this might be a viral hepatitis, a metabolic liver disease, children who are on chemotherapy, or having TPN, total parenteral nutrition, for a number of reasons such as short bowel syndrome or other malnutritional disorders. Okay, so let's explore some of the causes and risk factors for development of hepatocellular carcinoma. Now, the highest risk factor is, without a doubt, liver cirrhosis. And we've covered this in quite a bit of detail in a previous talk. So again, check that one out after this one if you haven't already done so. So 90 to 95% of people who develop HCC have underlying cirrhosis. But that being said, non-cirrhotic HCC can occur. Now, the cirrhosis can develop due to a number of factors that we'll go through now. So firstly, Hep B or Hep C infection. So chronic hepatitis B infection is the most common cause of hepatocellular carcinoma worldwide. And hepatitis C is the most common cause within Europe. Other factors that can contribute and cause liver cirrhosis include alcoholism, hemochromatosis, and primary biliary cholangitis. And we've covered both of these in previous talks, so go and check those ones out after this one. Also, metabolic syndrome, smoking, and there are some rarer associations which include androgenic steroids, primary sclerosing cholangitis, again a previous talk, alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency, and oral contraceptive pill use. Moving on to the clinical features. So usually patients present with symptoms of advancing cirrhosis and liver failure. And this can be manifested in a number of ways, including pruritus, so itching of the skin, and this is due to excessive bilirubin buildup or jaundice, splenomegaly, bleeding due to esophageal varices. So patients may have esophageal varices as a result of portal hypertension, and this can present as hematemesis or vomiting up of blood. And we'll cover portal hypertension in detail in a future talk, so stay tuned for that one. Other signs, other features may be weight loss, jaundice, confusion, or hepatic encephalopathy, and ascites, which will present as abdominal distension. The signs to look out for, so when you're examining a patient and you're suspicious that they may have hepatocellular carcinoma, so things to look out for would be jaundice, hepatomegaly or enlarged liver on when you're pressing on the abdomen. Again, ascites, so distension and swelling of the abdominal wall due to excessive fluid buildup within the abdominal cavity, spider nevi, peripheral edema, anemia. Patients may look cachectic and look like they've lost a lot of weight. Periumbilical collateral veins, which are also known as caput medusa. So these have the appearance of distended and engorged superficial veins seen radiating from the umbilicus across the abdomen. And the name caput medusa is actually Latin for head of Medusa, and it originates from the apparent similarity to Medusa's head, which had venomous snakes in the place of hair. And it's a sign of portal hypertension. And the reason it occurs is due to dilatation of the paraumbilical veins, which carry oxygenated blood from the mother to the fetus in utero and normally close within 1 week of birth. But they become recanalized due to portal hypertension, which has been caused by liver failure. And another sign to look out for is a flapping tremor. It's also known as asterixis, which is a feature of hepatic encephalopathy. Exact pathophysiology of asterixis is unknown, but it's thought to be due to the buildup of ammonia within the brain as a result of liver disease, where the liver can no longer break down the ammonia. And so the way to elicit it on physical examination is by asking the patient to extend their arms, dorsiflex their wrists, and then spread their fingers, so similar to pushing against a wall with their eyes closed. So this is used to test for the flap at the wrist, and it's the most common method of assessment. Now, it's also important to mention metastases. So hepatocellular carcinoma can metastasize or spread to other parts of the body, and the most common ones that it does do so to is the lung, the portal veins, the bone, and the brain. Okay, so now let's look at how we screen for hepatocellular carcinoma. So those patients who are at high risk for HCC should get entry into the surveillance programs. So patients who are cirrhotic hepatitis B carriers, non-cirrhotic patients with high hepatitis B virus DNA concentration, and patients with hepatitis C virus-related or alcoholic-related cirrhosis. And the screening tests that we have available include measuring the alpha-fetoprotein level, AFP, and this is a protein produced by the liver. And HCC is one of the tumours that's associated with elevated serum AFP levels. The diagnostic sensitivity of this blood test is about 60%, and false positives can occur, for example, in liver cirrhosis secondary to viral hepatitis. Other tests include imaging, so ultrasound scan is the first port of call. It has a sensitivity of 60 to 80% and a specificity of over 90%. But what's probably even better is combining the two. In terms of the diagnostic tests, well, a focal liver lesion in someone who has cirrhosis is highly likely to be hepatocellular carcinoma. And if a mass that's greater than 2 centimeters is detected on ultrasound and the alpha fetal protein is also raised, then this can be diagnostic. Further investigation is only required to determine the best treatment. So a CT scan can look for local spread, and a CT of the chest or CT full body can look for metastases. An MRI scan with contrast with a follow-up CT scan may also be used in the assessment. And if the diagnosis is still in doubt, well, percutaneous fine needle aspiration or biopsy may be required. In terms of other investigations that can be done, well, we've already mentioned alpha fetal protein as blood tests, but other blood tests to do would be liver function tests, which will be consistent with cirrhosis, so raised, deranged or raised liver function tests. Clotting abnormalities as well, because as we know, the liver is responsible for the production of clotting factors, and if there's liver failure or cancer of the liver, then clotting will be affected. And you can also do a chest x-ray, which may show a raised right hemidiaphragm due to the enlarged liver, or even possibly lung metastases, as we've alluded to earlier. Now, with cancers, what's often done is cancer staging to see where we're at with this particular tumour. And so a number of staging systems have been developed for HCC, and essentially, they incorporate the state of liver function and the patient's clinical state. So presence of ascites, portal vein involvement, as well as the tumour morphology. So the most widely used and validated way to estimate prognosis in patients with liver cirrhosis and HCC is a Child Pugh stage. So that looks at the tumour morphology, so whether it's uninodular, multinodular, how far it extends. It looks at the level of the alpha fetal protein. It looks at whether there's any portal vein thrombosis. Now, let's move on to the management of HCC. So the treatment depends on the location and the stage of the cancer, and also how well the liver function is preserved. The options we have include, so firstly, surgical resection, thermal ablation, systemic chemotherapy, chemoembolization, and radiation therapy. And for some patients, liver transplant may be appropriate. So in patients who have liver cancer, surgical removal with a curative intent may be possible. But again, it depends on the location, stage, and how well the liver function is preserved. So before the treatment of any primary liver cancer, any complications of cirrhosis or liver failure must be addressed and treated. And this includes ascites, encephalopathy, or spontaneous bacterial peritonitis, and also things like esophageal varices. So for patients who have HCC and there's no cirrhosis, then surgical resection is the treatment of choice. And in the short term, resection produces similar results to transplantation, but about 3 years, there is a higher chance of tumor-free survival after transplantation. Now, if resection is going to be considered, then very good liver function is required, because decompensation of the liver can occur after surgery. And furthermore, the liver that is left behind after resection still has malignant potential, and the recurrence rates are about 50 to 60% after 5 years. Another therapy for patients with early stage HCC is ablative therapy, or image-guided tumor ablation, which is done through the use of ethanol injection. So it's done percutaneously through the skin, and it's carried out on small tumors in those who have good underlying liver function. The larger tumours have been tried, but there's limited ablation success and a high chance of recurrence. There is also some radiofrequency ablation that can be tried. This is basically high-frequency ultrasound probes placed into the mass, and it's quite a new technique. It produces necrosis of the tumour, and it's an alternative therapy for HCC and liver mets when the resection can't be performed, or in the case of HCC, when the transplant can't be performed in a timely enough manner. and it may be more effective than ethanol injection for the larger tumours, but survival following radiofrequency ablation is inferior to hepatic resection. There is also microwave ablation, which has been approved by NICE, and this destroys tumour cells by heat, and it causes localised areas of necrosis and tissue destruction. So the way this works is there are needle electrodes which are inserted into the liver, either percutaneously or at laparoscopy, and they're attached to a microwave generator. There's also a method called chemoembolization, which is the delivery of high concentration of chemotherapy drugs directly to the tumour via the hepatic artery and using embolizing agents such as cellulose. And this tends to be used in those with preserved liver function with large or multifocal tumours without any extrahepatic spread or vascular invasion and patients who have no symptoms. And it seems to be effective in reducing tumour size as well as treating any pain or bleeding. Now, unfortunately, hepatocellular carcinoma is quite chemotherapy resistant, but systemic chemotherapy can be used in advanced disease. And there is a particular medication called sorafenib, which is the standard systemic therapy, and it's indicated for patients with well-preserved liver function and those with advanced tumours or those tumours progressing despite the local therapies that we've previously alluded to. Having said this, NICE does actually not recommend sorafenib for the treatment of advanced HCC in patients for whom the surgical or the local therapies have failed or are not suitable. Okay, so finally, we'll just touch on the prognosis of HCC. And this is all dependent on the extent of cirrhosis, because this can really limit the treatment options. The median survival from time of diagnosis is only about 6 months. And liver failure can occur with death due to cachexia, bleeding due to varices, and occasionally tumour rupture with some intraperitoneal bleeding. So surgical resection, liver transplant, and ablation by radiofrequency or ethanol injection are now the conventional therapies for early stage disease. And with these treatments, the survival at 5 years is about 50 to 70%. A higher AFP concentration is associated with a poorer prognosis. How can HCC be prevented? Well, it's all about trying to prevent liver cirrhosis, because that's the main risk factor. So addressing any alcoholism and minimizing alcohol consumption. Vaccinations against the viral hepatitis, so Hep B and Hep C. And patients who have cirrhosis are at highest risk of developing this cancer. And so frequent surveillance is recommended. So, for example, ultrasonography every 6 months. And this allows diagnosis at early stages where the tumour might be curable by resection or transplant or even ablation, and that 5 years survival rate of 50% or more can be achieved. Okay guys, so that brings us to the end of this talk where we've covered hepatocellular carcinoma. As promised at the beginning, we've gone through a number of things, including what hepatocellular carcinoma is, how it occurs, what the clinical features are and how it is diagnosed, and then we've looked at the treatment options and which patients are suitable for which option. Finally, we've just touched on the prognosis and how it can possibly be prevented. Thanks again for listening. Thanks again for all of your support. I really do appreciate it. We'd love to hear your feedback, so please drop some comments on the Apple Podcast platforms. Give us some ratings. Feel free to email us at hellomedtalks.com with your thoughts or any questions you may have, or send us a message on Instagram, and our Instagram is medtalks.uk. Give us a follow, subscribe to our channels, and we've got plenty more episodes coming up. But remember to share these episodes with your friends, your peers, or anyone else who might find them useful for exams and just general knowledge for the future as doctors. We wish you all the best with your revision. Good luck for your exams. And we hope you still keep listening to all of our talks. We've got plenty more coming up, so do stay tuned. Have a great day, guys. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the next one. Goodbye.